وبه نستعين ولا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم. ثم الصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين وخاتم النبيين وسيد المرسلين أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى آل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين. السلام على الحسين وعلى علي بن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين وعلى أصحاب الحسين. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Alhamdulillah for this opportunity to have a pre-Muharram seminar. I'd like to thank all those who were involved in putting this together, and I want to thank all of you for coming out for the gathering tonight. Those of you who were thinking that this would be something you could just come and kind of sit back and like listen to other people ask questions and get answers, that's not what it's going to be like. It's going to be more interactive. I'm going to get you involved as well too. And you'll see how we do that as we go along. But right now I just want to encourage you to be sitting in a place where you can see the slides. Sisters, can you see the slides? Yes, in the back there too? Okay, good. All right. And then inshallah we'll be explaining what we're going to be doing soon, inshallah. Usually when it comes time for Muharram, what do? We go to the majalis, right? We go and sit and listen to lectures and then spend a few minutes remembering some tragic moments that took place on the way to Karbala, and then in Karbala as we, you know, as the days went along towards Ashura, and then we remember what happened on the day of Ashura. But the tragedy of Ashura, the events that took place leading up to it in Karbala afterwards, there's much to be learnt from that. Let's go to the next slide, please. Some of the ways that we can study the tragedy of Ashura, I've listed on this slide right here. One of them is the historical study of events prior to, on, and after Ashura. Usually, in the majalis that we go to, alhamdulillah, they accomplish a great and necessary purpose. Usually, in those majalis, the focus isn't on the history. We hear like bits and pieces, like, this event took place here, this is how this person became shaheed here. But we don't see the whole, you know, events that took place. So that's one way of studying this. And it's very valuable and useful to do that. Another way is to look and see why is it that Imam Hussein alayhi salam did what he did. What were the motivational factors behind why Imam Hussein took his family, took his companions, went to Karbala and sacrificed? And that itself is a very important, very interesting discussion. But that's not what we're going to talk about tonight. What we're going to be talking about tonight, inshallah, is the latter two categories, which is what are the lessons to be learned from the tragedy? What are the things that we can gain and learn from that? And how can we apply them to our lives? Now, in terms of these lessons, some of the ulama have mentioned, some of our maraji, our great ulama who have covered this topic in recent years, they say that there's hundreds, if not thousands, of lessons that can be drawn from Karbala itself. And tonight, we're going to just focus on a few of the many, many lessons that we can learn from this tragedy. We're not going to try to cover all of them. And we're going to see how we can apply them to our lives as well, to a certain extent. In fact, my goal tonight in our seminar, in our interactive seminar, isn't even to try to go through a lot of the lessons, but rather I want to see if we can learn together how to derive those lessons. Because once we learn the process, right? Once we learn the process, then every time that we engage with Karbala, whether it be in a majalis, whether it be through our reading or listening to lectures, whatever it is, then we can be thinking along those lines of what does this mean for me? How is it that it's such an important light? It's a light that's shining guidance for me in my life here and now as well. Next slide, please. So, what we're primarily going to be focusing on in order to derive the lessons that we're going to be deriving tonight, inshallah, is we're going to look at some of the sayings of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. What did he actually say? Now, there's some sayings that all of you have undoubtedly heard before. For example, what have you heard that Imam Hussein said? Don't all speak out at once. Myth, okay, huh? Ahsan. He said that to die with dignity is better than to live with humiliation. Okay? This is one thing that we've all heard before, and something which rings very like true for us, and it's a motto for us as well too. Okay? Or mithli la yubayi'u mithla Yazid. The likes of me will never do bay'ah, will never pay allegiance to the likes of Yazid, etc. Okay? Now tonight we're going to be covering on some sayings. Most of them you probably haven't heard as much before. Or maybe some of you have not heard many of them at all before. Okay, now not that we're pulling this out from some like, you know, mysterious source or anything. No, these are there. But because they don't typically sort of fit with the flow of majalis, and we don't typically cover these in majalis. But tonight we get a chance to cover some of these sayings of Imam Hussein. And they're going to give us a lot of insight as to why he's doing what he's doing and what we can learn from that. And then we're going to be looking at some of the lessons that we can take from these sayings. And it's going to be interactive. How is it going to be interactive? The way it's going to be interactive is that you guys will have to do some thinking and discussion. And so what I'd like you to do is to break up into groups that you're going to be discussing things with. Okay, so make sure that you're sitting near other people who you're going to... I don't want like, you know, big groups of like 8 people, you know. So maybe like around, let's say around four people groups, you know. It can be a little bit less, a little bit more, that's fine. But please get together and form those groups. I'm serious, like you actually have to do it, like, you know, like, so. It's okay. It's a good chance to meet your fellow brothers or fellow sisters as well. If you don't know them, please reach out and welcome them, invite them to your group. He's alone? Okay, that's okay. I'll forgive him as well. Okay. Although it'd be better if you can also participate as well too in discussions. So, yeah, why don't you do that? Actually, it's better, yeah. I'm sorry, you lose your comfort seat, but okay. All right. So, I'll explain to you what you need to do when you need to do it. But let me just say one thing from now, okay? The presentation, this is the way it's structured, is that there's going to be 5 sort of lessons that we're going to try to derive from Karbala. Okay, 5 of them, and then we're going to be seeing how can we apply them in our lives. The interactive portion is going to be there very soon, right? But it's going to get even more interactive when we get to the lessons part, how we derive it in our lives, okay? So for now, just we'll start, you know, we're just warming up right now, and then we'll get really, like, you know, then you'll have to, like, discuss properly afterwards. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, now, can you guys read it from there or no? All right, so then, if you move closer this way, will you be able to read it or no? Is it just too far that way?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so we'll need to, if you guys don't mind, sorry. Cause
put it in the middle.
Okay. Saying number one. Okay, what we're going to try to do is derive lesson number one from this saying. So first of all, I'm going to ask Brother Ali here to read what this saying is of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Please, if you can take the microphone and do that first, please.
So lesson number one is from the speech of Imam Hussein, near Mecca, and it says, O Allah, truly you know that this was never about competing for power nor seeking material advantage. Rather, it was so that we could display the teachings of your religion and cause justice to reign in your land, such that the oppressed of your servants will be in safety and your obligations and customs will be carried out and followed.
Okay, thank you. Now, you guys got that, right? You heard that saying? Okay, now, next slide, please. Now, the same saying that he just read out, it's right here. Okay, just without the context. But remember, the context is he's speaking to a group of elite companions and scholars of the Muslim Ummah in Mecca. This is before Imam Hussein is going towards where? Towards Kufa, right? Before he's going to Kufa, he's in Makkah, right? He went there for what reason? For the Hajj, yeah? So there in Hajj, he gathered together the elite in the Ummah who were there for the pilgrimage, and he's talking to them. This is what he says. Now, what I want you to discuss in your groups, everyone has a group, right? Okay, is these three questions, please. Bismillah. Theoretically, if Imam Hussein had defeated Yazid militarily and become the Khalifa, the Caliph, would that have been negative or positive? Okay. Now, you might be thinking, okay, what is the brother asking here? It's okay. Just if you start discussing, inshallah, it will become clear. Bismillah. Okay. Thank you. See, it was advertised as a Q&A session, right? So I get to ask the questions, you get to answer the questions. Alhamdulillah. Okay. So, what was the main motivation behind Imam Hussein's actions from, based on this saying right here, Imam Hussein? Okay, I want to hear. So first of all, right now, just in your groups, appoint somebody to be the spokesperson. Okay? Somebody who can say it in a very brief and concise way, what it is that your group had come up with. And I'll ask a couple of groups each time. Not every group will have to speak each time. Okay? So I want to hear from one person from that group in the middle right there, the group over here, if you guys can, who's your person, your spokesperson among in your group? No, the one in the middle. If he's not comfortable, then don't push him, but if he can do it, it'd be good. Arif, can you do it? Yeah? Okay, so Bismillah, what was the main motivation behind Imam Hussein's actions, based on what he says right here?
Okay. And cause justice to land over, especially like the oppression of Muslims at the time.
Okay. Okay, so that meaning that it's not what? It's not, his motivation is not to what?
It's not for power.
It's not for gaining power, it's not to. Okay. Now, so accordingly, what defines whether he's successful or not?
So we discussed that this was at the time of this situation.
Yeah.
At the time, he may have been unsuccessful for a short-term purpose.
Okay.
But his purpose was more long-term. So, as you can see today, there's still a lot going on.
Okay, that's good. But now I'm just based on this right here, like right here. So, accordingly, what defines whether he was successful or not? Okay. Thank you. I think you guys got it. But I want to hear now from the sisters. So, can this microphone also go or no? It's just that this one is stationary. Okay. All right. So do we have a second? Oh, this we can just give them that other microphone? Okay.
We can have a third one. Yeah, there's a wireless.
You can just give the sisters the wireless, yeah? Okay. So this sister's group right here, this one, yeah, who's your spokes lady? The first one and then the second one, yeah. Alaykum
salam. So, his main motivation.
Okay. And then, according to what defines whether he was successful or not?
So, for question two, according to the code, what defines whether he was successful or not? We thought that his intention, because his intention was so true and so pure, and that's what defines that he was actually successful.
His intention for what? What is he intending to do?
To sacrifice,
for
the way of Allah.
Based on what it says here. What you're saying is right. Okay, I just want to see if we want to focus on, based on this right here. There's a reason why I'm trying to get you to focus on what's being said right here. So what defines whether he's successful or not based on what he said? Okay. Okay. Anybody from the brothers think that they know, they have a good answer for number two and number three? Okay, that's the your group already answered.
And they have justified that wrongly.
Okay, can I just say what you're saying based on... He says here that he wants to display the teachings of your religion and cause justice to reign in your land. So Imam Hussein will be successful if he's able to do that, if he's able to display the teachings of the religion and cause justice to reign in the land. Right? So that's exactly what you're saying, but just I'm saying it, I'm trying to root it and anchor it in the saying. Okay, go on. Uh-huh. Second one. What defines really successful or not?
He was successful because based on this event.
Okay.
And that the true form of Islam was revived.
Okay.
The people do realize later, like whatever he was doing was not for the material value of becoming a talent.
Okay.
But in fact, he was really working towards Allah.
Okay. All right, and then if he had defeated Yazid and he had become the Khalifa, would that have been negative? Would that be wrong then? Because if you say his motivation, you say, is not to, for him to be the Khalifa. That means if he becomes Khalifa, then he's wrong then? No.
No.
Why not? Because? Because, because he could still do this. He could still get to the goal of displaying the teachings of your religion and still do that, but that's not the goal. Okay, ahsant. Okay, thank you. That's what I wanted to hear. Thank you. Okay, now, next slide, please. So, the lesson, one of the lessons we're learning from this is the lesson of ikhlas. Okay? That when we do something, we do it for, out of purity. Okay? We do it for the sake of God. And we do what God wants from us. Alright, now, ikhlas, just a brief, ikhlas is a subject where, you know, it's a deep subject. Just a brief thing about ikhlas, alright? That there's different levels of ikhlas. One of the breakdowns the ulama have provided us is with this. That number one is that when it comes to our belief in our creed, that we believe in our mind, those things that we hold to be right and true, they are truly right and true. Meaning that we believe in things which are based on aql, based on proper reasoning, not based on just like, you know, whims and fancies and these type of things. Number two, in action, okay, that we do things which are pure. We avoid haram and we do things which are wajib. Right? This is a very important level of ikhlas as well. But it goes beyond that as well. In intention as well. And this is where we're talking about sisters I mentioned that his intention was pure. Imam Hussein's intention was to do this not for his own personal gains, like seeking power or getting to be the Khalifa or becoming rich or something like that. Or he felt bad that the Ummah had ignored him. Nothing of that. Alright? It was purely for the sake of Allah and the deen of Allah, the religion of Allah. And there's even higher levels as well too of ikhlas. I just want to mention that there are higher levels. We don't need to go into them right now. Now, success. You know how I called the question about success? Was he successful or not? Success is what? It depends on how much ikhlas somebody has. Alright, Imam Hussein alayhi salam, all of you said he was successful. Right? But from a purely political perspective, you would have said that Imam Hussein was a failure. Right? If you just look at political, I mean, he went and if he was aiming for the Khalifa, he was a failure, right? He didn't get to he got killed, right? But all of you said that he was successful. Why? Because he did his action with ikhlas. And one of the lessons that we learn when we study Karbala is that if somebody has the right intention, is doing it for the sake of God, then Allah takes that and multiplies the impact of that action by the level of ikhlas that that person had. Right? And there's a principle that we have from the Qur'an, وَمَا عِنْدَكُمْ يَنْفَدْ وَمَا عِنْدَ اللَّهِ بَاقْ. Whatever is with you passes away, but that which is with Allah stays around. It sticks around. And that's what happened with Karbala. So actions which are done with ikhlas have an internal impact. Like until today, Karbala and what happened there is still having an impact on us. Now how do we practice ikhlas? Very quickly, just to give you just a hint on this idea, how do we get to go from one stage to another stage? Is that one way of doing that is to analyze our actions, see what we're doing, right, and realize that it's important that if we want to take something from Karbala, we take something from Imam Hussein alayhi salam, then we need to be improving ourselves. We have to understand it on an intellectual level that okay, this is where I am, this is where I need to go next, and then we need to slowly put that into action as well too. Okay, yes. Purity. Yeah, purification. Okay, the separation of defilements and impurity from the substance, which is, you know, like the original substance. Okay? Alright, now, this, keep this lesson in mind. We're going to come back to it when we're talking about how to apply this in our lives, inshallah. Okay? Now, number two. Next slide, please. And this is saying number two. Actually, I wrote saying number, not lesson number two. Alright, Brother Farhan, can you read this first? Should come over. Yeah.
You see the covenants of God being violated, yet you do not speak out. You bootlick the oppressive rulers. If you had not separated from the truth, had not differed in the sunnah after clear evidence, and had borne some troubles in the way of God, you would have been in charge. But you preferred the oppressive rulers over yourselves, and let them take over. As a result, you handed over the weak over to the tyrants. You handed over the weak over to the tyrants to be their slaves, and the tyrants to act as they please, and appoint speakers from the pulpit in the cities to spread their message. This is another speech of Imam al-Hussein in or near Mecca to the elite among the scholars and the sons of the companions.
Oh, thank you. Next slide, please. Okay, so there's two questions I'd like you to discuss now. Based on what is being said here, what was Imam Hussein Islam accusing the elite of the so-called ulama of doing? Right? What is he saying that their problem is right here? And were the consequences of their actions just limited to themselves? Or was it the case that it affected others as well too? This is pretty simple, alright? So just discuss it for like 1 minute, inshallah, and you'll figure this one out. Can I get one of the sisters groups in the middle over there? One of the spokes ladies from there, please, if you can tell us what your group came up with. And pass over the microphone to them, please.
Assalamualaikum.
Alaikum assalam. Just give the microphone right here. Okay.
So they were choosing people who were deviated from the path of the sunnah, but they were choosing them to be in the truth that were supposed to act on the sunnah.
What happened, the tyrants are appointing speakers from the pulpit in the cities to spread the message. So these ulama are stepping back and letting them do that. Okay, just to be clear. Okay, so on, reasoning. Okay, so then what were the consequences of that? Was it just limited to themselves or no?
No, it wasn't limited to themselves. It was affecting the entire population that were under the rulers of the
time. What was the last one?
Under the rulers of the time.
Okay, alright. Okay, good, thank you. Next slide, please. Okay, there's this idea of the elite versus the followers, okay? And the idea that the elite can have a great influence on the life of their followers. Okay, there you saw that these are a few group of people that Imam Hussein is addressing, but he's saying that the impact of your actions has been enormous on the whole society, on the masses as well too. Okay, as Sister was saying, like, so you, these, they're stepping back, letting these like tyrants do what they want, right? They're giving them free reign. It's their job to go and take the rulership, right? It's their job to go and stand in front of this injustice. It's their job to go and preach the truth to the people, to preach the deen to the people. Instead, they're stepping back, and as a result, all these people under them are suffering as well too. Because the tyrant at that time is able to go, and he has a free reign to do what he wants.
So, in families, okay, and in society, in a just think about a family unit, right? You have, in a family, you have people who are leaders, and you have people who are followers. For example, the father and the mother are the leaders, and the children are followers. The older brother is a leader, the older sibling is a leader, the younger siblings are followers, typically. And I'm not saying that in the same way that you have a leader of a society, but the point is that the actions of an individual can be very influential on the actions of others as well too. So, in families and societies, there are some who make decisions willfully while most follow their lead blindly. Okay, why is it that we're doing something, like sometimes it's just, this is the way that it's done in my family. Right? This is the way it's done in my culture, without thinking about it. Now, there's an example we have in the Quran of this concept. Right? I just wanted to point it out, that here, Allah addresses the wives of the Prophet. He says that whoever among you commits an indecency, her punishment shall be doubled. Why is it doubled? Right, she committed one indecency, but she's having double punishment. Some of the Mufassirin have said that it's because the actions of a wife of the Prophet, her being in the position that she's in, she's a role model for the other ladies of the society as well too. Similarly, if she does good, if she's obedient to God and the Prophet and acts righteously, she'll have twofold reward. Why? Did she do two actions? No. She did one action, but twice the reward. So this is an important lesson, inshallah, as we go along. We're going to see how we can apply this. Okay, next slide please. Okay, quote number three. Alright, can you read it first? All right. Okay, just do the phone.
In response to the tyranny and injustice, you did not give up any wealth to combat it, nor did you put your lives in danger for the sake of the one who created you, nor did you oppose any of your family members for the sake of God. This was while you saw the covenants of God being violated, yet you did not care. Well, when it came to family agreements and acts, you were concerned.
Okay, so before we analyze that, I just want to point out what he's saying. He's talking to the same people again. He's saying that you did not put your lives in near danger. I mean, you didn't go into jihad. You didn't try to like do anything to like combat this. Nor did you oppose any of your family members for the sake of God. Meaning that like a lot of it was like nepotism based on like, okay, because you know, even if that person is doing something wrong, because he's my brother or he's my tribesman, I can't stand up against him. I have to go along with it, even though it's something which is wrong. And you saw the laws of God being violated, you didn't care about them, but when it comes to family agreements and pacts, you were concerned about them. Meaning that, let's say that here, like there's a haram being committed by the ruler, okay, you're not going to say anything about that. But when it comes to like something to do with your own family, then you're going to stand up and do something about it. Okay, now, next slide please. So question number one, were the people in the audience completely rotten in every respect and did they do no good? Alright, this question for you to think about. Number two, or did they do some good and some evil? Well, this is kind of the same question. And what were their priorities? Alright, this is the question that you can just discuss. It's, again, it's very simple. It should take you about a minute to discuss, and inshallah, we'll go along. Okay, so which group here? Do you guys have something first in your group? I'm sorry.
The first question. Were the people in the audience completely rotten in every respect? Did they do no good? But the way I see it, this was while you saw the covenant of God being violated. And in that case, they did no good to the family came first.
Okay. Is that what all groups, do you guys come to the same conclusion? Okay, can you pass it to this group right in front of you? What did you guys say? Come to
me. We believe that they did do some good.
Okay.
Although it was very selfish of them to support their own family, personal interests first, but
okay.
It was still like a good. And for the second question, yeah, they did evil, of course. Like they excluded what was right, what was justice.
Okay.
For the third question, what were the priorities?
Yeah.
So we got that. The priorities were their personal interests, their families, their past, and
okay.
Justice was not the priority.
Okay. Ahsan. Thank you. All right. Next slide, please. So just to, what the brothers were saying is correct. Just hit the down button. Yeah. So one of the lessons we can learn from this is the lesson of necessity of knowing our responsibilities and be able to prioritize among them. Okay? There's a principle of important versus more important. Sometimes there's something which is important. Like I want to help out my fellow human being. I want to help out my brother, right? Because, you know, they're my brother, right? So I want to help them out. But sometimes there's something which is more important than that as well too. And this is a very important principle in Islam. Okay, there's a lot of examples we could talk about where people don't get this straight. They think that, oh, this is something which is important for me to do. But it's like, wait a minute, is this the most important thing for you to be doing right now, right here and right now? Okay? Just as an example, right? Like, let's say that it's the month of Ramadan, right? And somebody is doing itikaf, right? And there's a very important, like, Quds Day protest going on at the same time. Okay, this is important and that's important as well too. Right? Right? But which one is more important right now to do then, right? Okay, so a lot of examples. So there are definitely some. Now this is from the book Aftab Dharma Saf. I'm giving you the sorcerer here. This is from Ayatollah Khamenei. Okay? He says that there was definitely some who joined Imam Hussein who had to leave aside their wajib hajj incomplete. Because it wasn't the case that people were going for hajj every year, right? Sometimes it'd be once in a lifetime people go for hajj. So he says that, look, among the other group, there wasn't just 72 people who left Makkah. There was a whole group of people that left. There must have been at least one person who had a choice between doing his wajib hajj versus going with Imam Hussein. But he made the choice of going with Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Okay, there's another example. Now, sometimes though, it's easier to focus on the side issues, which are easier to implement, than to focus on the core issues which are uncomfortable and difficult to deal with. Okay? I mean, yeah, it's easy. Sometimes easy to do some things, but those things which really matter, which are like the pillar, right? Those things are difficult for people. And again, we'll get to some examples, inshallah, as we go along with this. Okay, there's five quotes, and then there's examples. Now, okay, so inshallah, we'll get to those. All right, next slide, please. Alright, quote number 4. Alright, can you do it first? Can you read it? Okay, just come up here, please. It's okay. Yeah. Alright, this one.
I praise Allah, the exalted with the best of praise, in ease and difficulty. Oh Allah, I praise you on account of your honoring us with the prophethood, that you taught us the Quran and the deen of Islam, that you gave us ears, eyes, and hearts, and that you did not place us among the mushrik and those who associate others with you. Speak of Imam Hussein, delivered to his companions on the night of Ashura.
Okay, thank you. What's your name?
Sujab.
Thank you, Sujab. Okay, this is what Imam Hussein says, you know, at the night of Ashura, before he tells his companions that, look, they're here for me, you're free to go, and he lets them go, and then they come one by one, and they say that, no, you know, even if we were to be killed, like, you know, 1,000 times and burnt alive so many times, then we would still be with you. But this is what he says at the beginning. Now, I want you to analyze this based on the questions, but I have to say this is a bit difficult, okay, to really think here. Why is it that Imam Hussein is saying these things of, and not other things? Okay, next slide, please. So, ask yourself, Imam Hussein, like other Masumin, he chooses his words very carefully, okay? Why would he choose to praise Allah for these particular blessings? Number one is the blessing of honoring us with the Prophethood. Number two is that he taught the Quran and the Deen. Number three is that he gave us ears, eyes, and hearts, and you're not placed among the mushrikeen. There's three blessings that he highlights. Why is it that he is choosing to highlight these and not other ones? And how does this relate to how Imam Sadiq alayhi salam salutes his grandfather Imam Hussein when he says, I bear witness, this is from a ziyarah. When Imam Sadiq wanted to ziyarah Imam Hussein, this is how he addresses him. He says, Assalamu alayka, ashadu annaka, I bear witness that you established prayer, you followed the messenger and did tilawa of the Quran in the way it ought to be done. So think about this, okay? What does it mean that you taught us the Quran to read the Quran the way it ought to be read? What does it mean to establish prayer? What does it mean to follow the messenger and, you know, the prophethood, honoring some of the prophet? There's some message here. Let me see if you can come up with that. Isma. I want another sister's group to please speak up. You guys have the microphone, right? So. Okay, so I want you to please tell us, what did you understand these blessings to mean? What is it that Imam is saying when he says that he honored us with the prophethood, that he taught us the Quran, the Deen of Islam, and he gave us eyes, ears, and heart? What did you understand from him? Whatever you understood. Bismillah. I think they just need help turning it on. Is it on?
Difficulty, and he's praising God
in both circumstances. And when he says that you taught us the Quran and the Deen of Islam that he gave you eyes and heart, I think it refers to the fact that people, it's not just merely the eyes, ears, and heart, it's the ability to look past the veils that have been placed on the hearts of the sinners and the shaykhs and those who associate others with God. But they see through those veils and they have that specific connection with God and praising God, but the ability to actually be able to understand the Quran for the actual meaning, because often when we read the Quran, our hearts are so deadened that we don't see the true message, but they've been blessed with the true message. So he's praising God for that blessing.
Okay. That was very good, thank you. That's exactly along the lines that I was thinking. Inshallah, let's see the next slide and then you can... Okay, lesson number 4 could be said like this, okay? That it's the lesson of going beyond a shallow understanding of the religion. Imam alayhi salam, one of the interpretations of what he's saying is he's praising Allah for giving him and his followers a deeper understanding of the religion. Okay, one that goes beyond just a shallow level and then you hit a veil, like Sister was saying. Okay, it's a deep penetrating understanding of the religion that's an active understanding. So, for example, when in that ziyarah of Imam Sadiq, he says that I bear witness that you established prayer. Okay, there's a difference between saying prayer and doing iqamah of salah. You know, you say hayya ala salah or qad qamat as-salah, this idea of salat standing up, okay, or being upright. Right, what does it actually mean? There's a difference between the two. Like they say that there was an Iraqi, you must have heard this before, they say that there was an Iraqi, when I guess the British wanted to colonize Iraq, they send somebody from there and he goes to like Iraq, right? And he had never been in the Muslim world before. So he walks in, he goes, they ship him into this country and he hears the Adhan and he sees all these Muslims like going to the mosque at Adhan time, right? So he asks, the deputies around him, he says that, okay, what are these guys doing, right? And what are they saying, right? So they explain, oh, this is the call of prayer, they're going to the masjid, they're going to do ablution, they're going to say their prayers, bow, and prostrate to God, right? And they're going to go back to their work. So he's like, so it doesn't have anything to do with like our being in charge and our being able to colonize them, right? But they said, no. Okay, so fine. He's like, we let them do it. No, they can continue doing it, right? They can do that type of prayer, which doesn't have any value. I mean, it doesn't... Because after all, prayer is supposed to be a unifying force. It's supposed to be a congregational thing, right? It's supposed to be something where we cast aside any type of shariq, right? Where here's, like for example, in this case right here, they're accepting oppressive and colonizing rulers. If prayer was truly upheld the way it ought to be, then you're casting aside any type of allegiance and obedience to oppressive rulers. Prayer is supposed to, when it's established, it's done on time as well too. Like in Day of Ashura, Imam Hussein alayhi salam does prayer on time, right? Sometimes you find people, they want to do other things and not do prayer on time on the Day of Ashura, right? Or when it comes to commemorating because of Azadari, right? But Imam Hussein teaches a lesson of wanting to do prayer on time, right? These things have that's part of establishing prayer properly. The difference between reciting Quran and doing tilawah of the Quran, as sister was saying, somebody can just read it, and it's just words, right? Another person can read it with the spirit of wanting to act upon it and truly act upon it. Imam Hussein is saying that, oh Allah, thank you for teaching us how to act upon your Quran as well too. This is the true message of the Quran, what he's doing right here. And then, there was a person named Shimmer. You guys have heard of Shimmer, right? Did you know that Shimmer was known as an alama? Right, you go to some books that talk about Shimmer's biography, they praise him as being an allama, right? Somebody who's excessively, extremely learned, and somebody who was a hafid of the Quran as well too, right? He used to recite a lot of Quran, but what kind of Quran reciting was that? That's why Imam Hussein, praise be to God who taught us the Quran, right? Because this is the way Quran is supposed to be read and acted upon. Okay, that's lesson number 4. And then the last lesson we're going to cover for tonight is the next one, quote number 5, next slide please. Oh, just one quote about establishing prayer. He says that, Imam Khomeini says, on the day of Ashura, when one of his companions said that the time of Dhuhr has arrived, Imam Hussein says, you have reminded me of prayer. May Allah place you among those who pray to Him. He stood and said his prayer right then. He didn't say, we need to battle right now. Rather, his battle was for the sake of being able to perform his salat. Okay, this is what you call, this is a very insightful understanding of Imam Hussein. What does it mean to establish prayer? Why do we praise Imam Hussein as establishing prayer? Because he's the one who let us establish prayer the way it ought to be. Otherwise, the prayer that Shimmer and people like that had, we don't want that type of prayer. That's not what God wants from us either. Even though it might be with proper pronunciation and done, you know, with like lots of Quran, but that's not the prayer, that's not the true spirit of prayer. Okay, next slide please. Okay, this is the last quote, alright? Or actually there's two quotes that say the same thing. Okay, the same message behind them. Okay, I just need one of you brothers to... Can you do it, Joel?
If you do not assist us or at least fear us justly, the tyrant will gain strength and they will come to put out the light of the year and profit. This was a speech by Imam Hussein near Makkah to the Lee and the Swalid and the sons of the companions. Second one is, indeed I have heard my grandfather, the Messenger of Allah, say, the Khalifa is prohibited from the family of Abu Sufyan. Introducing Muawiyah upon the member slash his belly. The people of Medina saw on the member, yet they did not slash his belly, so Allah cried to him, is he the sinner?
Okay, thank you, Hassan. Okay, next slide please. So, two questions. What do these quotes tell us about remaining neutral in the conflict between truth and falsehood? Very simple. Alright, just talk about it briefly among yourselves. And what is the way that Allah deals with people who protest, who don't protest injustice? Actually, who don't protest injustice. Okay, so these two questions. Alright, what does it tell us about remaining neutral in the conflict between truth and falsehood? And number two, how is it that Allah deals with people who don't protest injustice, who remain silent in the face of injustice? Okay, it should take you 1 minute to discuss it.
...form and will accept oppression as a norm.
Okay.
Right? And that's how the rulers will, the next generation of the oppressed rulers will continue to rule on you.
Okay, thank you. So... he's saying that based on this, what we understand is that there's a sunnah of Allah, there's a way that Allah deals with people.
Silent, when they know that something is wrong, but they let it be without speaking up against it, it's not just going to go away magically, right? It's not just, you know, that, okay, if I just sit there and let me just go and do dua and not do anything about it. You know, like, I mean, dua is important, but we have to, I mean, if they don't do anything, they don't stand up against it, then what's going to happen is that things are going to get worse. And brother explained one of the reasons why things get worse, okay? And Imam Hussein, he's saying that if you don't assist us and give us right, what's going to happen is that the situation that's there right now with Muawiyah and then Yazid after him is going to get even worse. That's what he's saying to the people. Even here, he says that the people of Medina saw Muawiyah and the member and they did not slash his belly, so Allah tried them with Yazid, who was even worse than Muawiyah. Okay, so that's the pattern, right? So that's why these are two very important things we're learning about. Standing up against injustice. So what's the lesson then? Next slide please. Is that those who fail to protest injustice are part of the injustice. Okay, this is a very simple and thing that we know this already, but it's a good lesson that be an opponent to the oppressor and a helper to the oppressor. There's no like neutral area where if you know that oppression is going on, you're quiet. Okay, now let's go, can you go down? Now what we're going to do is trying to recognize the lessons. Okay, let's skip this part because we don't have enough time. Let's skip this one as well too. Skip this one. Okay, practical applications. Okay, next slide please. Now, there's some different scenarios I put together, daily life sort of things, right, that come up, that where the lessons that we talked about, you can apply them to these. Okay? So, this way, I come home, I find the kitchen in a mess. I'm alone and my family is out for an hour. I spend the entire time cleaning up. When they come back, I'm just waiting for somebody to say something, but no one does. And at the end, I get depressed and make up my mind to never do such a thing again. For like a half a minute, just discuss them in your group. Okay, think about the lessons that we've learned and see how this applies to those lessons. Or see how the lessons apply to this, rather.
Barbecuing, whatever it is that you want to say, okay? Alright? Now, what is the lesson of being who had a good discussion about this? Anybody? Okay, so.
Take.
It's just from the
So we thought, Assalamu alaikum.
We thought that this went back to the first lesson that we got from the hadith of Imam Hussein, which was about ikhlas, purity of intention, and purity. And because we weren't looking for that ego boost when you first spent the time cleaning it, but now you're looking for it when they come home. But when you did it, it should be with purity. And when the person got depressed and made up their mind not to do it again, they're invalidating that purity. Because now they were doing it for recognition instead of doing it for the right reasons, which was to keep the house clean, to keep it neat and organized.
Or you could say this way, that to make Allah happy, right? To do our responsibility in front of God, because God wants us to be clean. Okay, now, suppose that somebody came home and they actually had come to Nani, right? And that made us happy. Is that wrong now?
Yes.
No. Anybody say that it's wrong now?
What other question come again?
The question was this, that suppose somebody came home and they did say, oh, thank you so much, you did a great job, right? And we felt happy because of that. Is that wrong?
No.
It depends. It depends.
Actually, yeah, that's more right, it depends, okay? But let's say that we wouldn't have, if they hadn't said anything, we would have been fine for us, right? But because they said something, now we got happy. Why would we get happy? Okay, when is it okay? Why you say that?
Because I am really happy because they said it.
Okay.
Actually, I'm in the same
okay.
Board.
I did it in the same with God. Okay, and now I'm happy because they said it. Then
it doesn't matter. It doesn't make any difference.
Okay, but when is it wrong then?
It's wrong because it depends. If somebody is saying it, I'm only happy because they said it,
okay.
And I have achieved my target because I made it.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying, it depends.
So the assumption is this, that we did purely for the sake of God. Okay, if somebody mentions it, doesn't mention it, okay, that's not the important, right? Because Allah was watching us, right? I mean, everything, you know, He's the source of everything, He's there. Right? Every single thing that we do, every moment by moment He's with us. Okay, even this one we did, it doesn't matter whether anybody else points it out or not. We did it with that intention. Now somebody comes and says thank you for it, and we feel good for that, right? Is it wrong? No, it's not wrong. Okay, alhamdulillah, you know, this is one way of Allah like giving us like an acknowledgement, but even if He hadn't, it would be fine for us as well too. Okay?
Can I see one example?
Sure.
I was waiting in the lobby for my friend about 20 minutes, because my friend by mistake he went back. I was standing in lobby, everyone come, like 20 people, more than 20 because it's a high-rise building. Someone come, knock the door, open the door. I stand up, open the door, but they didn't say thank you.
Right.
Then another come, I open the door, but another didn't say anything. Just went in the bottle, didn't say anything.
Yeah.
3-1, 4-1, just someone, if they said thank you, then I become happy.
Yeah.
Really, I become tired.
Right.
It happened today, Father.
Right.
But if they say thank you, it's really.
Yeah. So this is a good point.
That's why they invented the card.
Yeah, let's say that I come back home, right?
So I become nervous.
Okay, that's it. Very good point. Let's say that I come back home, right? And I see that my wife, for example, has put in a lot of effort in cleaning up the place. And I don't say thank you for that. I've done something wrong. Okay, let's be that clear here, right? And not that if she comes and tells me and she gets upset that I can tell her that no, you have to have ikhlas, right? And I can repeat my I've done something wrong, right? That's my responsibility. But on the other hand, she has a responsibility to do what? To do it for the sake of God, meaning that she doesn't get upset if she doesn't hear anything from me. You see how we all have responsibilities. So in that case right there, the person who gets the door open for them, they should say thank you. They're doing something wrong by not saying thank you. But on the other hand, the person who's opening it, is doing for the sake of God. Right? It doesn't matter if somebody, even if 1,000 people were to come. Why? Because I know that I'm being that means by which this person is coming into the center of God. Right. So I'm the one who's winning here, not that person. Right? I'm the one who's getting the thawab here.
Yeah.
Yeah? Now this is, you might say, a simple lesson, okay, but believe me, if people who do Islamic work were to understand this one lesson, right, things would change, the nature of our work would change. Really, like a lot of the problems, they stem from not understanding the simple lesson that we see and we can gain from what's going on. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, the other examples where it comes up, like going for a ziyarah, right? Somebody goes for a ziyarah. There's so many people where it can become something which strays away from the ikhlas. Okay? Now, the examples of that, let's just think about it for yourself around time. doing Azadari, being involved with Azadari as well too, right? The people who present, the people who read poetry, people who do it, social media activity, okay? Like for example, I post something, I put something up, right? I tweet something, okay, and then I'm waiting for people to come and retweet it or whatever like that, right? To get extra business. Now, next slide. Okay. Cooking in homes is complicated. I can't even remember when my home state is. When Muharram comes around, I'll just sponsor food for a couple of nights and I'm sure everything will be okay. So think about the lessons that we talked about and how we apply it. Simple, right? Half a minute.
To the lesson about prioritizing our responsibilities and knowing what's important from what's wajib. In this case, Homs is wajib, but it's also important to sponsor the Muharram Majlis.
So, thank you. It just so happens that Homs is one of those things a little bit difficult, right? Sponsoring, even though like it may be more expensive, because a lot of times when you cut it out to a fifth, right, it doesn't come out to be that much, right?
Yeah.
Even though sponsoring might be more expensive, right? But it's easier to do, right? You just call up somebody, say, I'm going to sponsor the thing, put my name down, right? And then you get it cooked, and you, especially like for you guys living in Toronto, it's something for you to like cater food and stuff too, right? So you get done, okay, it happens, right? But does it count for the homes? No, your homes is the amount of money, right? This is a pretty serious deal here, right? Even if it's complicated to calculate it, right? Even if I have stocks and I have like investments, I have loans, I have mortgages, okay? Like, so I still need to go out and figure it out. And there's some people who like spend a long time trying to understand the whole thing. But at the end of the day, at least they're taking responsibility in front of God, right? And it's very important. As a reminder, homes is due on the excess money that we have at the end of the year after we've given up those normal expenses for ourselves and our dependents. Okay, now, let's say, for example, that I make, in the year, I make, let's say, $10,000. Right, and the expenses that I had were $8,000. At the end of the year, 1 year after I received my first paycheck, I look and I see, okay, I have $2,000 left. I paid $400. Is that being paid in full? Just a simple reminder. If you have questions, talk to me afterwards. Okay. Next slide, please. Community leaders appoint a committee to handle social issues. When they organize a soup kitchen volunteer day, they don't attend because, after all, they delegated the task. That's number one. Number two, a father and mother are concerned about the influence of pop culture on their children, yet they are regular subscribers to Netflix and are updated on all the blockbuster releases. Okay? So, it's pretty obvious here. Just think about it, just talk about it for briefly and then show it. Community is a point of community on social issues, right? So, aside from issues of like, you know, that we need to train people and, you know, just look at the principle. The principle is that once I've delegated something to somebody else, therefore it's their job, right? Is that the right thing? Is that the right way of going about doing it? No. Let me give you an example, okay? A very beautiful example that we have from the life of our Prophet, sallallahu alaihi wa sallam. Sees that his camel goes and stops when he enters Medina. Stops at the house of Abu Ayyub al-Ansari. He says that he sees that there's a plot of land there which is empty nearby, and he asks about it. They say that it belongs to two orphans. So he goes and he buys that land from his own money. And then he takes a shovel and says, we're going to build a masjid. He himself gets involved with building that masjid. Okay, now, why is it that he does that? Why didn't he just say, okay, you know, Bilal, you go do Imam, you go do that? Okay, or, you know, I don't know, Abu Ayyub, you go do that. Right? I'm busy like dealing with like issues of like fatwas and I don't know, like handling like, the speeches and the khutbas. You go ahead and you actually do the thing. Because he wants to show that, and that's not how it works. Everyone has to have a table role here. Everyone has to get involved. And this goes back to the lesson that we had about the elite and the followers, right? If the elite, those people who are in positions of leadership, those of you who came here tonight, okay, most of you are or will be people who are influential on other people in your community. So otherwise you're not coming. Now, what that means is that those things that you do, just by those things that you attend, right, those steps that you take, they have an impact and they other people are affected by these as well too. Don't think of yourself as just somebody, a one man or one woman island. No, you influence others as well too in your actions. Okay? And then the second one right here, is that, of course, you know, that if we want our children to change in some way, we have to be, you know, doing the same thing. I mean, we can't be expecting that okay, the influence of pop culture on your children, but we're showing them that, hey, it's okay, right? We're right up there, we're watching the same movies. Okay, we tell them, we're worried about the influence of movies on them. Okay, well, we need to stop watching movies ourselves, right? Why are we so hungry to see what Mr. Hollywood gives us, you know, tomorrow? Right? Is he our friend? Right? Is the images and the messages that they're pumping towards us, are they Islamic? Or are a lot of them anti-Islamic, right? These are serious issues, okay. Next slide. This was interesting. As I flipped through news headlines reading the latest about bombings in Iraq, settlements in Palestine, and drones killing innocent people in Pakistan, I sighed out of dissatisfaction with my Muslim brothers and sisters. The problem lies with you, I say, and I've heard this before, by the way. The problem is with you. You raise your standard of education, culture, and living, and then you'll be able to lead a dignified life. I signed a petition pleading for a government official to stop sectarian violence in Syria. I then signed off, thanking God for my comfortable life, and I attend to my own affairs. Okay, which lesson is this pointing? The lesson of what?
Responsibility.
Not being silent in the face of oppression. Right? This person, right? It's true that okay, that Muslims need to improve their own situation, right? But they're being oppressed, right? I mean, that is a responsibility that we have to stand up against, to call the oppressor, and say, you are the Yazid of the time. Right? It's very important. It's essential. And then this thing of like, okay, let me plead to a government official to stop sectarian violence in Syria. Right? I mean, you saw that, right? Like about a year ago, like one of the techniques that some Muslim organizations took was to like, you know, plead to like, you know, I don't know, Secretary of State X or Y, I don't know what, these people who, so like go and stop the violence in Syria, right?
Yeah.
Well, who's the one who's causing that sectarian violence in the first place?
Yeah.
Right? Where's it being funded from, right? So I'm going to go plead to them to stop. I mean, does that make sense? Right? I mean, I'm going to take them under protection. Anyway, this is something that it goes back to the same principle, the same lesson. I'm not standing up against the oppressor. Okay, and the next slide is the last one. I think, let's see. Yeah, I'm sort of particular about the justice of the heart issues. I make sure to wash the handles of public sink with soap before using them. By the way, do I need to do that? No. Okay, then that's, sometimes you can do asraf, actually. You can do something haram sometimes, by wasting water sometimes, if it's excessive. Yes, my career involves dealing with riba, taking maybe interest in haram, but, well, after all, we have to earn a living, right? That goes back to that lesson about prior transfer. Okay, and then I think this, what, one last one. See? Yeah, this is it. I've recently found success in being involved with local politics, and now I've been invited to be an official government representative and a special interfaith envoy that is going to visit Israel and Palestine. I'm sure I can do a lot of good, even though probably be a carefully choreographed visit. Okay? And this is one of those where, you know, you might say, if you're thinking about it, you might say, okay, wait a minute, oh yeah, I can accomplish some good, right? But at the end of the day, what this means is now you're going to be a representative of that institution which is causing this injustice to take place in the first place.
That's right.
Okay? And that's not correct. Okay, and then I think that is it. Okay, this is the last one. The neighborhood around our local center keeps on deteriorating as the years pass, but we've installed a new alarm system, and so far we haven't been the subject of any criminal acts. We're definitely doing the right thing, or else our attendance will be suddenly be growing. But eventually we want to move out into the suburbs. Anybody, which lesson does this apply to? Or which lesson does this apply to this right here?
Keeping to your family and back.
Exactly. You know how we talked about where you keep your family, right? Yeah. You live such a comfortable, personal, you care about your personal things when it comes to others, right? One of the lessons we get from Karbala is that we care about others, right? We care about the situation. Even if I personally, let's say I'm able to say my prayers correctly and my Quran is good and my fasting is good and I go for Hajj, go for Ziyara, right? So is that it then? That's all of Islam right there?
No,
Islam is just about me. Islam is about Islam. Okay, Islam is about like justice for me and for everyone. So that the La ilaha illallah in the earth. Right? Now this situation right here, I mean, yeah, okay, your mosque is growing in attendance. Why is it growing? Usually it grows because people immigrate. Not because you're keeping the people who were there from the beginning.
Yeah.
And just because that's happening, what about the environment? Isn't your responsibility to spread Islam also to the outside of the centers of the mosque as well too? Are these not human beings? Do they not also need to be talked to and dealt with? And given this message of justice and the message of the truth. Okay. I guess since most people won't have time to do that one. So I'll just make a closing remark that the idea here was to see this is a new thing, right? I mean, it's a new way of trying to see things in a practical way. And inshallah, as we go through the morning ceremonies, inshallah, we should attend those. We have to cry, we have to listen to that. All that's very important. That's not where it stops, right? That's a way of renewing our commitment to the messages and to the lessons that we learn from what happened in Karbala and to see how we can apply them in our lives. Sallallahu ala Muhammad wa ala
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad wa ala Fajr. يا صاحب الزمان خليفة الرحمن امام الانسان والجان اجل الله تعالى فرجك وصلى الله تعالى مخرجك وزهورك السلام عليكم ورحمه الله وبركاته
اللهم صل على محمد وعلى